Welcome to Dr. Fred Bell's Health, Science, and Energy Show. Brought to you semi-live, semi-dead, semi-here and there. The shortest month of the year, which sucks because them bills come earlier due. February 28th, there we are. Well, March is here and the daylight savings is right around the corner, and I'm going to save my daylight. So anyhow, as promised, we're going to continue on with what we were doing last week. And I guess Steve Barish had a great show the other night. Thanks, Steve, for filling in. I had a voice was quitting on me. I've done so many shows, but it's recovering now. Here we go, continuing from last week as promised.
So breathing in this heavy environment, environmental gases and things that we breathe today, the body over a period of years starts to build up a tremendous residue at the base of the brain that moves forward. When it starts to move from the base of the brain forward, it starts to upset your physical balance because the cerebellum, which is the first area entered by the blood-oxygen combination, is also the balance, the physical balance. And you'll find that you can't play hopscotch anymore and you can't balance on one foot and jump around the room and the kinds of things that you could do when you were a kid. And we take it for granted, but it doesn't have to be taken for granted. When it moves into the midbrain, what happens is we have digestive problems. We have assimilation problems. And the body begins to think that we've got to get big, we've got to have a weight problem, we've got to have all these problems, but this isn't true because you can change these energies. And what happens is in order to change the energies back to what you were when you were younger, you have to get rid of all these pollutants that are building up in your brain. And when it finally gets to the forebrain, it affects your psychic abilities. A lot of people can't be psychic, their clairvoyance goes away, their intuitions drop, and they become senile, which is kind of another form of ignorance. So the pyramids that we developed back in the early 70s, worn over a period of years, have a tendency to act like a vibrating source that removes all these toxic materials from the brain and restores the brain to its natural clarity. So as a result of that, as a countermeasure, the pyramid has been an incredible asset that we've had in our product line for years and years and years. And the big thing is about if you want to make a pyramid for yourself, you have to make it out of precious metals. You can't use plastics or aluminums or products like this because they have a tendency to produce the ion effect. Another thing that we developed was the negative ionizer. In 1972, when I gave my first lecture about negative ionization at Palos Verdes High School, everybody thought I was crazy. But look at all the ionizers that developed through the 70s and the 80s and now into the 90s. That was another field that we got into real early and were real successful with. Another device I'd like to demonstrate is called a nuclear receptor, which is this thing right here. And this is something that's kind of come to being, and it's a real aid. Can I get somebody up here for muscle testing? One person? Who volunteers? Okay, come on up. Here she's coming.
What about the Tesla watch?
The Tesla watch is good for ELF. I'll take questions here in a couple of minutes. Because we can go over today if you guys want to, and we can go into any subject that you want. What's your name?
Judy.
That's all right. Put your arm. Let me see. Get over here. So actually, come over here maybe. We can see. Everybody can see a little bit more. Okay, now put this. Just put this right arm straight out. Yeah. Yeah, let me see here. Let me just... muscles, what we're going to use with the liver. Now make a fist. Okay. Now resist when I push down. Resist. That's your strength. You feel it? Okay. Now, how many of you like to breathe this kind of toxic glue? This is the nasty stuff. How many of you like to breathe this? The glue sniffers in the group. Okay. Now put this in your other hand. Okay. Now breathe it. It's very toxic. It says it'll kill you if you breathe it for very long. So we're going to get her high enough. You get high first. Okay,
well,
now.
How do I breathe that?
Just stick it up in your nose. There you go. Now resist. Resist. Feel the difference?
Wow.
Weak, right? Okay, now. Yeah, it will take you right down. Now, this is just what you're breathing every day. Okay. Now, put the receptor on. Now, put your arm back out. Okay, now put the glue back.
Feel it?
Yeah, resist now. Resist. Resist. It really makes it.
Wow.
You know, it's a difference, huh?
Just within that short of time.
Yeah, it just takes. It's instantaneous. If you breathe poison, it's instantaneously affecting you. Yeah, it's called a nuclear receptor.
The sapphire?
Sapphire, yeah.
Beautiful.
Oh, thank you. Let me have that back. Just wanted to get my point across. This is a technology that was given to us by the friendly people. Yeah, thanks. It's Pleiadian technology. It's a microwave trap. It traps microwaves. It turns the frequencies into frequencies that the human being can utilize, and it filters them, filters the energy through a gemstone. Now, you just don't put one of these things on. A person has to be muscle tested. And once you're muscle tested, you find the right frequency stone because they're all tuned to your particular weakness. For example, if you have a thyroid problem, the frequency of thyroid is green. You know, there's three primary colors in the universe and there's four secondary colors. So, therefore, you would tune up for the thyroid. Now, let's say you wore the thing for a year. Now, what happens is if you look at how the cell works, the cell has a thing called DNA, deoxyribonucleic acid. Okay, it's a tongue twister for me half the time on a Saturday morning. But DNA is a vibratory thing. Your body is, first of all, frequency or vibration on what's called the etheric level. Then it works down into the electrical level, and then it works down into the biochemical level. You've got to go back three levels. Now, the etheric level is not like the astral level, which would be like your intuitions or your emotions. The etheric level is a very physical part of your body that can even be seen by the right kinds of dyes or the right kinds of photographic equipment. The electrical level is controlled 100%, and when you get into electrical levels, you're talking about ionization. Ionization means chemical change. Chemical change means metabolizing. So all of these kinds of devices that work, that these high-tech things that are hurting and negating the positive health benefits of the human race. And one of the first symptoms of when you're getting hit by one of these things is depression. I don't know how many of you ever suffered depression, but you should never suffer it. And there are ways of completely getting away from it. But once you are hit by this energy and you feel this depression, what happens is you start dropping down and down in frequency until finally you can't metabolize anymore. And so devices like this are of tremendous help. There's a book called The Fellowship. We brought a few of them. It was written by Brad Steiger. It's available in almost any bookstore. It's on Bantam Press and Doubleday that you can get. It was written about some of my work. Also, some of this intelligence stuff that I was telling you about, you can get hold of it first-hand information by talking to a group called the Executive Intelligence Review. And they publish a newspaper or a magazine in Washington, D.C., it's an Executive Intelligence Review. I forget their phone number, but the area code is 202, and they're in the phone book back in Washington if you want to get more information. The tape series that I'm working on now has all of this information in it and a lot more, and you can pre-order it when you come down to the booth. Now what I'd like to do is entertain some questions for a few minutes. Yes. Right. Yeah. You ought to muscle test for a receptor. I'd love to tell you about Pleiadian technology and what they can do. They can control light, for example. For example, you'll hear somebody seeing a spacecraft. It's hovering. Two or three people see it, and three or four people won't see it. It's because they're able to control the light and which way it goes. And when I learned about how the aura frequency was generated, it was real simple. It's kind of a simple thing to explain. Just imagine if you take a piece of wire, and you have a long piece of wire, and you hook a battery across it, electricity will move through the wire, and it creates a magnetic field around the wire. The body is the same way. You have a brain. The brain has electrolytes in it. When we were talking about Fotai, ginseng, and Gotu-Kola, we're talking about is what produces electricity in the brain. And if this electricity in the brain can be made to produce a EMF, electromagnetic field, around the body greater than that of ELF or a TV set or a microwave transmitter, then the internal field of the body is going to overpower the external field coming into the body. And terrestrial technology to date has developed a lot of devices, like the little thing that Wayne Cook was selling, the little filter that goes over the line to filter the line. There's a lot of terrestrial type devices that slow down the effects, like the watts, the Tesla watch. All these things have an effect, but they do not encompass the entire body, as some things like the receptor do. And when we talk about the herbs that you put in your body, you have to turn them on electronically. And devices like the pyramid and the receptor turn these devices on electronically. And then what happens is once the brain is generating these fields, it's transmitted through 72,000 major nerves, which are like wires. These nerves and these wires amplify the energy fields through what's called nodes of Rainier as they go down through the body. And this is where sodium and potassium and phosphorus are real important, because they keep the wire network, the transmission network, at peak utilities. Now, standing here at the National Health Federation and giving you this is like a first grade lecture to what the technology that we have now. We have even developed cloaking devices with alien technology now that allow you to become invisible to most frequencies. We've been able to demonstrate and look into other dimensions with creating entire curtains of energy, and that's currently what we're doing now. And not only can we do this thing, but we build and install entire environmental systems and install them in people's homes all over the world. So, I mean, it's just like, it's awesome what we're really doing, but we're not really set up here to make a presentation like that. But in this tape series that we're working on right now, you're going to get first-hand information. But getting back to your problem over here, the receptor tuned to the right frequency will help you out a lot, because it'll build up your vibratory frequency. Now, no, it won't interfere with a watch. It'll help the watch. Now, let's say, for example, you were wearing an emerald. You had a thyroid problem, and you muscle tested for a thyroid. All right, after you wore that for 5 or 6 or 7 months, the thyroid gland would automatically be on its own. It would be back up to full speed from where it was. So then you come back and you muscle test again for something else, because what we're doing is building up the body step by step by step, as you would have had you had a massive vitamin E deficiency, as you would have had a zinc deficiency, and you did something about it over a period of time. The same thing now in the energy medicine that we're dealing with. We're assuming that your nutritional program is fairly well together. If it's not, we'll help you with that, because we have a catch-all type formula, like I was talking about. But eventually, your whole entire system is working properly because you fine-tuned it and groomed yourself into and then you're ready to go into the next step, which I'm not going to talk about today. We're just getting you ready for that. Is there any other questions? You had a question.
I've seen this pyramid thing.
Right. Sure. Yeah, it's easy. Yeah, the best we found, for example, if you take a piece of metal and put it near a magnet, it will pick up the magnetic field and become magnetized, like a piece of iron, okay? The question was, how does the pyramid work on your head? So what happens is we found that if you took a pyramid shape and brought it into a magnetic field, which the Earth is full of, it will pick up a magnetic field. We also found that a pyramid shape resembles the carbon atom, and we found that the body is oxygen, hydrogen, nitrogen, and carbon. Three gases in one solid form make every cell in your body, makes every atom in your body function into a cell. We found that cells, when combined together, formed organs, and these organs all had vibratory rates. The brain is an organ. And we found that any time that you upset the electrical ability of the brain by putting pollutants in it, it drops in frequency. When it drops in frequency, the integrity of the gray matter, which, by the way, at the base of the brain is an area called the pons, which is the pyramid lobes of the brain, whenever the integrity is destroyed of the brain, the actual shape, the physical shape of the carbon atom, which is making up all the substance of the brain, is distorted. As soon as the pyramid is brought back into the field of the brain, the head area, the carbon shape is put back in its proper shape, and its energy starts to build back up what it was supposed to be before, and as a result of that, all the molecular alignments of the brain go back to what they were before this pollution was in there, and out goes the pollution. It vibrates it or resonates it right out. You could do the same thing, for example, as another way of looking at it. How many of you have seen these little metal boxes that have a ultrasound in them, and they want a jeweler cleans your ring? He drops the ring in there, and you couldn't get in there with a toothbrush, But when you get in there, you drop it in the ultrasound, that cleans that ring up, the diamond or whatever it is gets really shiny. It's very bright, very beautiful. The ultrasound did that, right? It's a microwave. The pyramid, you could look at it as a friendly type microwave, but it causes the brain, and believe me, the human brain is infinite in its capabilities. All it has to be is addressed. We only use about 3 or 4% of our brains. The extraterrestrials that I was around said they use 10 or 15% of theirs, and they have 3 or 4 times the lifespan that we do. So what happens is it causes the brain to start vibrating and throwing these things out. I used to be a heavy smoker when I was in the Air Force, and I hadn't smoked in 10 years. In 1975, when we invented the first pyramid to be worn on the head, we didn't even know we were going to wear it on the head at the time. Another doctor discovered this is what it did. It wasn't my discovery. It was somebody else's. It was my idea, but it was somebody else's discovery. We put this on the head, and I started wearing it for 4 or 5 months. I was getting headaches from it. The reason I was getting headaches from it is because all this nicotine that had stored up in my brain, and anybody that's ever smoked has got nicotine in there, started going back down to my liver. Because the liver, what happens is the effect of the liver, okay, yeah, the liver, the detox was causing the headache. So then when the liver caused the headache, what happened was I'd start urinating out all this horrible nicotine. You could smell it, and I hadn't smoked a cigarette in 10 years. That's how we actually made the discovery of what the pyramids were doing. I'm going to put the microphone down, but I go ahead and talk for a while. Officially, I'm quitting, but unofficially, I'm here now.
Well, anyway, I guess that I did put the microphone down there and probably reached the end of this anyway. Let me see. Oh, yeah. Well, this one wasn't at the end yet, but this was an interesting one, to say the least. Okay, now we're going to jump. That one's finished, so we're going to go ahead and jump into another little thing here, which I think you'll enjoy, and away we go. Dr. Bell, are you there?
Yeah. Shall I introduce Intro Girl or not?
No, they can do without that.
Okay.
Hi, everybody. Welcome. And I'll just tell you a little bit about Dr. Fred Bell before he gets going. He's an international inventor, and he's patented the nuclear receptor. He's the father of negative ionization. Some of his clients include Queen Elizabeth, the Dalai Lama, Muhammad Ali, and many holistic institutions worldwide. He's remained anonymous until now for reasons of privacy, but he now wants to enlighten you into the true values of the millennium. So we're very lucky to have him here. Please give a very warm welcome to Dr. Fred Bell.
Thank you. Now, adjust that down just a bit, because I don't like to hear a big echo in my thing there. So, how's everything over here in London? It's like there's a lot of smiles here. I don't see too many frowns. I guess we got a higher consciousness in this building than we do out on the basic streets around here, right? For those of you that don't know me, I'm kind of a strange person. I don't even know what I'm doing half the time myself. But give you a little background. I was born in 1943 in Ann Arbor, Michigan. I went to the University of Michigan, and I worked on early stealth projects when I was a young kid, and one of them later on became known as the Philadelphia Experiment. How many of you in here know what that is? Okay, so we're going to get some audience awareness here. Okay, originally we started on that. Now this started before I was born, obviously. It started with minesweepers coming through the Bermuda Triangle in World War II to be demagnetized, because if you're magnetized and you're out there sweeping for mines, you're going to blow up. This is the bottom line, you know. But our end of the project was, well, what happened was when they would go through the Bermuda Triangle, they used to keep radar contact. And of course, Britain, as you know, is, you know, credited for inventing the first radar sets. And then, of course, the secrets were stolen over to Germany, and later on they came to the U.S. And if you remember the Pearl Harbor incident, World War II on December 7th in 42. Our radar was working, but the people weren't paying attention to what was on the screens. But anyhow, going through the Bermuda Triangle, the boats would sometimes disappear off the radar, even though they were only a half a mile to a mile away. And so they began to study that phenomenon. And that phenomenon has to do with, as we know now, planetary auras. Everybody in here has an aura field, which we'll talk about today, but later on. And you have what's called a mass consciousness. You know, if you take an electromagnetic signal and you bring it close to a coil, that signal is induced in that coil. Or if there's a signal on the coil, it goes to another coil. And this is mutual induction. And unfortunately, the energy of this planet is not exactly conducive to DNA growth. DNA in our bodies, as you know, is what's responsible for the integrity of our cellular expression and our way of expressing consciousness through these kind of beat-up forms that we've got. A long time ago, back 12,000 years ago, there was a much more advanced race here known as Atlantis. And how many of you in here know what grays are? People from Theta Reticuli 2 and 3. For those of you that don't be bashful with your hands, back in 1952, we began to document extraterrestrial visitations by a negative group of aliens with the books about Betty and Barney Hill. And today, there's literally millions of people have been abducted by these aliens. And these aliens only come here every 12,000 years during certain time cycles. Because you can look at our consciousness as a big clock. We have a thing in astronomy which we call the precession of the equinox, wherein we rotate around a central sun called Alcyon in the Pleiades every 25,827.5 years. Okay? If you were to go over down here to Cairo and look at the Great Pyramid, you'd find 25,827.5 inches around the bottom of the Great Pyramid, corresponding to to the precession of the equinox. And strangely enough, the original British inch and the pyramidal inch do relate to real divine volumic measurements of the planetary bodies. The kilometer metric system was introduced by a bunch of crazy Frenchmen, scientists, a long time ago. And basically, from what I can tell from the kilometer and the metric system, it introduces greed into the establishment because, you know, for example, if you go buy a gallon of gas, you get 4 liters in gasoline. They charge you here per liter what we pay in America for 1 gallon of gas, 4 times as much. When you go down the road at 120 kilometers, you think you're really hauling. But in fact, you can get out and jog that fast if you're really good, you know. So you start to see what happens. And none of their volumetric measurements really correspond to the curvature of the Earth, the mass of the Earth and the Moon, et cetera, et cetera. So anyhow, as we go around this Pleiadian system, we have 12,000 years of darkness and 12,000 years of light. In the 12,000 years of darkness, the soul expression factor on the DNA is very low. So we behave in crazy ways. The last 2,000 years of this, 2,250 years, as these cycles are divided into 12 of those, are called astrological seasons or cycles. We're coming from the Piscean Age. The vibration of the Piscean Age was such that people that lived in bodies in those times believed in God, but didn't know God. So if you're a believer and not a knower, you have people establish these huge, beautiful cathedrals and churches, which are dotted all over the countryside. But unfortunately, as we see even today, because of the karma, or the dharma, as I'll explain later, of these situations, people engage in religious contradiction between one religion and another, and we end up with a situation called holy wars. So that's not, being a believer is not enough. Today we have a higher frequency of incarnating souls that are called knowers or Aquarians. And you can bet that the Aquarians will put an end to the holy wars. But as Einstein said, you know, people have to, the growth-resistant generation sort of has to die out and get out of the way. I mean, we're not going to get Saddam Hussein or Milosevic to see the light. Those boys are going to have to leave this planet, go out in the astral plane, which barely exists, and get a little bit of an anointment and come back and try it again, because they didn't get it in this lifetime. You know, the fact that we have war atrocities this late in the game, coming into the new millennium, is a little bit over the top, as I think you say here in England. So you begin to see how the cycle works. The soul incarnates and disincarnates, okay? As pretty much most of you know. And people like, you know, the Chinese would put down and suppress the knowledge. That's why the CIA had to spend several million dollars back in the 50s to get Tenzin Gyatso and his brother, currently known as the Dalai Lama, out of Tibet before they were assassinated. Because the Chinese were afraid that if this reincarnal knowledge got out, that their government would collapse. In fact, when we have holy wars, we have to have regulatory bodies, i.e. governments. And we have to have taxation and monetary systems to control those things, the people, and imprisonment if you don't play the game. So you begin to see what's been going on for the last 2,000 years. On top of that, the environment has been slowly being destroyed. Example, if we were back a million years ago looking at the air supply, we would have looked at the air supply and seen 50% oxygen on this planet. Okay? How do we do that? We looked into amber, which is sap. Petrified sap with bugs in it, that yellow pretty stuff that I'm sure they're selling downstairs in some booth somewhere. We looked at that. Now, if you go into an ER ward and you've been in a serious traffic accident or some kind of an accident, and your heart is barely pumping, what's their biggest consideration? Is to keep the blood, the oxygen, going to your brain, or what happens? The brain doesn't work anymore. Well, in World War II, we had 34% oxygen on this planet. People were still pretty much vitalized and alive. Today, we have anywhere between 17% oxygen in cities to underground parking lots, like in the Big Apple, New York City, 7% oxygen. Whoa. Now, if we're down to situations in the summertime when we don't have negative ionization, we've got high levels of positive ions, and low levels of oxygen, what happens? We don't get the same situation of an immediate notice of destruction of the brain. You get a gradual decay of the gray matter in these heads, which I think most of you can see from a planetary standpoint is happening worldwide, globally. Okay? Now, where does our air supply come from? Our air supply comes from 40% trees. But when you go to McDonald's and get a few hamburgers, a few of those hamburgers being supported on a daily basis has taken out 55 acres of rainforest per burger over time. So we have to go to the other 60% of the oxygen producing part of this planet. Does anybody know where the other 60% of their oxygen comes from? The sea, the ocean, exactly. Algae that goes down 75%. From the surface. Now, if we go back to World War II, to now, we've detonated over 1,000 nuclear bombs on this planet, everywhere. You know, in France, in Area 51, and all over the New Mexican deserts, and all over Russia. Everywhere we've blown these bombs up, down the Bikini Atoll. Radiation in your body creates damage. Same thing as when you eat bacon and sausage, which I notice people in Europe eat a lot of, or smoke a cigarette. Damage is the same. The damage, just the timing is off. In sausage and bacon, you've got nitrites and nitrates, which create free radicals. Or when you have radiation, which has a half-life of 2,000 years, raining down through your water supply, it creates free radicals in your body, which destroys cellular integrity. Once again, consciousness is being destroyed. So you begin to see some of the problems. Now, when she mentioned that I was the father of negative ionization, that means that I introduced negative ionization from earlier scientists on this planet that had done work in it, such as I, but I was the one that globalized the commercial ion industry. Because your body is supposed to reproduce 50 million cells per second if you have a healthy DNA exchange rate. Anything less than that, you suffer. But you can't reproduce any cells per second without negative ions or pure electrons. In the days when I started lecturing on negative ionization, which was back in 1972 at Palos Verdes High School, a school in California, in the air we would measure 2,500 negative ions per cubic centimeter, which are good, and 3,500 positive ions, which are bad, per cubic centimeter. Today, those numbers would be, in a room like this, probably 50 to 150 negative ions per cubic centimeter, from 5 to 7,500 positive. I worked at NASA for a number of years. When I left the University of Michigan, I went in the Air Force. When I was in the Air Force, I'll explain what this slide means in a minute. When I left the Air Force, I went over to NASA. At NASA, we worked with astronauts, and we did experimentations with animals and humans. We found that anything that was in an environment of positive ions for 24 hours, pure positive ions, would be dead. So, just giving you some statistics. Going back to the water supply, with this radiation that's coming from all these bombs, you know, there's radiation in the water tables. There's radiation that, you know, it evaporates up and it rains down again, spreads across the fields. Probably some of your mad cow disease with free radicals and cows over here where they got a dose of radiation which produced that over in this country. There are radiation belts. Chernobyl, when it went down here, which means wormwood, created a huge situation. In America, and I'm sure it's the same here, if I were to take a lactating woman, a woman that's eating dairy products, as most women do, 9 months pregnant, and she would cross the state line, meaning her county line, as it would be called over here, she could be arrested in our country by the FDA for two reasons. One, for carrying a radioactive substance across the state line, which would be her breast milk, and this is all women. And two, carrying chemicals across the state line in our country, in the USA, which would be DDT. And so what you have is a huge storage area in the body, in the glandular areas of the mammary glands in a woman and the prostate in the men, and that's why you got such a high increase of cancer. That's the only reason. You know, even tobacco. You know, I don't know how many of you guys in here honestly smoke. Anybody in here? A few of you. I used to smoke when I was at NASA. I'm not into smoking. I don't recommend it. But in America, when English arrived in America, that's where we learned about tobacco. Indians were growing tobacco there and smoking it in their peace pipes. But they didn't have any cancer. Now, why didn't they have it? Because in tobacco today, they don't give you fresh tobacco. They put all these preservatives and chemicals in this stuff. And that's where you're getting the cancer from. It's not the tobacco. It's all the stuff they put in it. So you begin to see and understand what's happening. In the case of the oceans, with this raining in of this stuff, it's destroying this algae, and that's why the oxygen content is going down. Now, I don't know how many of you study the U.S. military, but I worked in the U.S. military for years. I went to over 3,000 military and defense-oriented companies as a civilian before I got into New Age stuff, visiting every kind of top-secret project because my job was instrumentation. 3,000 companies covers just about every company in America back in the 70s when I made all these visitations. When I worked at Rockwell, I worked on a thing called the ILAS. The ILAS project was the beginning of what is known as Star Wars. I don't know if you realize it right now, but we are actually having a conflict right now, not only on this planet, but we have a problem with these extraterrestrials known as Greys, and we have a battle going on in outer space right now. Some of you might have seen some of the footage on Fox and some of the American networks. And it's hard to see good television over here, but I think you're getting satellite now, and I haven't checked that much out, only what's in the hotel. And you'll start seeing some of these shots of actual battles taking place from some of our space shuttles like the Discovery, because it is being photographed, it is being shown to the public now. They're just not explaining yet what it is. So you'll start seeing more and more of these kinds of things as time goes on. I worked on all of these projects. In America right now, we're closing down all of our surface bases. All our military bases on the surface are being closed. the public discovered only recently when we built a new airport over in Denver, Colorado, that we had thousands of miles of huge underground freeways that were being used by the military that connect many of our states, like California to Nevada to Los Angeles, etc. And all these bases, about 80% of our military force is going underground now. Why? Because the planet is not going to be habitable for very much longer on the surface unless you make giant changes in your personal aura. The only type of changes that are going to cause people to survive, we're coming into an apocalypse. I think you can see that right now. And to increase the intensity of the apocalypse, we have to go in and understand a little bit more about reincarnation and the astral plane. When you're living on the physical plane, a certain amount of bodies are available. And so people that are deceased are not here, but and when they do come here, they incarnate into a limited amount of bodies that are available for incarnation. On planet Earth, there are X number of billions of souls that are living around what is called a ring pass knot. A ring pass knot is an area that you incarnate within. It goes from the center of the Earth to the outer boundaries of the Moon. But it's a higher frequency known as the emotional or the astral plane. Now, 300 or 400 years ago, in those days, we didn't have but maybe a billion people on this planet, if even that. Because there weren't enough bodies here, because of the last apocalypse that we had during Atlantean times, which shortened our lifespan by quite a bit, and left remnants such as the Bermuda Triangle, we didn't have the amount of bodies, so we had these long heaven worlds, times to cool out, when we were disincarnated. So we had a larger amount of disincarnate souls not living on this planet and just a few here. But then all of a sudden we started procreating at a tremendous rate. And we started to empty out the astral plane. Now, I don't know if you guys ever read what we call a Bible, the King James Bible, but it talks about the Great White Throne Judgment Day in the Bible. And I'm not a religious person. I'm a factual person. It talks about one day when people just can't go out into the heaven worlds and get away from their evil deeds, they have to stand up and face a judgment. Well, that judgment call is now. If you disincarnate now, you're out of here for a few hours, not 1,200 years or 1,000 years or 500 years or 50 years. You're back because there's almost a shortage of souls right now. It's like a vacuum. So as a result of that, we have another problem. We have a situation on this planet which is coming up in America. And it will spread around the world. And I've been working on this problem for 2 years in the news media over there. And that's called schoolyard shootings. I don't know if you're aware of that or not. The reason I didn't make my lecture the other day, I was still recovering from jet lag from being at Columbine with Vice President Al Gore and places beyond that. And travels, I've been to all those school shootings dealing with that problem right now. I've had to kind of put this career on hold, turn around, because I'm real concerned with the children of this planet. They're our future. What? School shootings. Yeah. What happens is we have kids now that used to get to go after being treated bad by humanity. They would go out in the heaven worlds and take a break. It doesn't happen now. I don't know how many of you remember World War II, but I remember it. Because I lived here in Germany before this incarnation. And I remember this. I remember the Hitler Youth Movement. And I remember the Russians coming down on the Berlin with a vengeance. And I remember those kids were 14 years old, 16 years old, too young to serve in the army of Germany, in the Reich. And I remember them getting murdered by those big tanks. Because they were defending a useless Führer at the end of World War II. There's 14 to 15,000 kids died that way, slaughtered by the Russians. Your general, Montgomery, and ours, Eisenhower, refused to go to Berlin and Potsdam Park for the last battle because they didn't want to be part of the carnage of those kids. They knew better. They didn't want the karma at that time. I also remember the Jewish children back during the concentration camp days, the teenagers. They were captured by the SS and brought in, given these strange mohawk-looking haircuts and sprayed all kinds of different colors in their hair, were painted orange and red and green and made all kinds of tangles. Then paraded around the death camps for 3 or 4 weeks and marched into containers with Zircon B gas and gassed to death. These kids die with attitude. Believe me, they did. And in our own federal prisons, I know about serial killers. You know, in a prison system, capital punishment isn't going to work because our criminals are a product of our society. They're a product of our misdeeds and our inadequacy to judge people and treat people fairly straight across the board. Caste systems suck. As a result of that, when you go into these prisons in America, you take these serial killer rapists and you execute them on death row, they immediately, like all the other children, reincarnate quickly back. Andrew Golden and Mitchell in the Jonesboro shootings, they killed 5 or 6 people and wounded about 10 or 15 more in Jonesboro, Arkansas. Mitchell himself, at 13 years old, was a marksman. And at 11 years old, 2 years previous to that, was up in our state of Wisconsin for rape charges already at 11 years old. What does that tell you? So you begin to see how we have to educate ourselves and start working within our school systems to solve some of these problems. It's not just something that's going to go away. It's going to get a lot worse. So that's what I've been doing. I've been real busy with all of that sort of stuff. Because in America, understanding reincarnation, that's a little out there for them. It's a little bit of a throw in the face of religion, but guess what? Religion doesn't work anymore that way. And strangely enough, in countries like India, Taiwan, Thailand, that study Buddhism, Brahmanism, and the way of reincarnation, don't have schoolyard shootings, don't have the kinds of complications in there. They don't even have the kinds of crime that we have. You have to learn and understand how these countries can work.
Pol Pot.
What?
Pol Pot said the Buddhists don't have the same amount of crime as we have here. How about Pol Pot?
What does that know?
They're Buddhists.
The Buddhists.
Cambodia is a society, and it has its atrocities.
Well, yeah, there are countries where Chinese come in, and communism comes in, and they do have atrocities. When you have communist infiltration, that's why communists take out the Dalai Lama, tried to. That's the problem with those kind of countries. But now, I didn't want to get too far into this. I just want to show you a little bit about what's been going on in the world so you understand what I do for a living. And I'm not sure what it is half the time. Now here, this book that I wrote, we'll get into this book because this is a lot of this stuff is in here, starts out with what I was very much concerned with at World War II. At the end of World War II, we had a lot of paranoia about the atomic bomb. Because Russia suddenly had it. We used it already, and that wasn't too wise, but we did it anyway. So we were very paranoid about it getting used on us. So we started to develop these huge radar sets. And these huge radar sets are what I worked on. This is an ANFPS-35 radar developed during World War II down at Los Alamos, New Mexico, which I'm sure you're hearing a lot about now. We just lost some of our atomic weaponry to the Chinese. Who cares if we lost it or not? It doesn't really matter. We start a war, it doesn't matter what they started. We go up here to Pakistan and India and they started. It's all over anyway. So why worry about it, you know? And sooner or later it's going to get out of the bag. But when we were testing these radars, and that radar right there is, the antenna is 466 feet wide. It's about as long as this building and 9 stories tall, about as tall as this building. And when they were building that radar at Los Alamos, it put out 5 million watts. And that 5 million watts started putting out radiation, and we were being observed by extraterrestrials from Theta Reticuli 3, known as Grays. Zeta Reticuli, that's where it comes from. And these ships would get in this radiation field, and they used what was called a plutonium reactor. And the ships would overheat, basically, and the ships would crash. So we ended up with a crash at Roswell. We ended up with a crash at Laredo, crash at Aztec, many different crashes. During the time of the crashes, We extracted some live aliens in 1951. We had the first alien extraction alive and taken into custody. A guy from Johns Hopkins University, Ernest Mendoza, termed this alien EBE, extraterrestrial biological entity. And so as a result of that, EBE used to tell a lot of lies. We had an American colonel, who's not named, come in and study with EBE, and they taught us telepathy. We then taught our pilots flying in an area called the Four Corners, which is up in Colorado and New Mexico, and these pilots then made ESP contacts with these ships, so that in 1954, we made a deal at Muroc Field, which you would know over here as Edwards Air Force Base during Eisenhower's time, on February 18th to be exact, where we would house aliens at Area 51, Dulce, New Mexico, and Bentwaters, which is here in England. Those were the first housing of these aliens. In exchange, they would give us weapons technology, and we would give them sanctuary and the right to abduct a limited amount of human beings for observational purposes. That was the beginning of the extraterrestrial situation. The reason that we surrendered to them is because in 1943 at Roswell, when the crash took place there, the first day we announced to the world that there was an extraterrestrial crash. That was the very first announcement that we did. But that night we found a second ship, and on that second ship, which was much larger than the first one, we found a whole lot of human body parts on that ship. And that's when a thing called MJ-12 was formed to cover up and make this thing a great secret, which it still is today to a degree, to the unenlightened. The enlightened can obviously see it as a reality. So you begin to see how all that started. The technology came out and went into medicine, and it went into technology as far as integrated circuits. The transistor, for example, came from this. Fiber optic technology came from this crash. Indirectly, AIDS came from this crash. A lot of things, good and bad, came from these original crashes. And this, in my book, I explain intimately, page by page, what each thing was and where it went and how it got here and what it does to you today and how it affects you and what you can do about it. There's a lot you can do about it, but you got to know how to fight it. You got to learn about how your immune system works. Most people don't understand their immune systems. That is your consciousness, your immune system. When you start to get sick, it's because you've overloaded your immune system, and your immune system goes into what's called an involuntary cleanse. During this involuntary cleanse is when it starts to exhibit the characteristics of the poison that triggered it. Homeopathic medicine is the science of light cures light, poison cures poison, and launched by Samuel Hahnemann, and even previous to that in Europe over here, was much well known for centuries, was the way of dealing with that. Unfortunately, homeopathic medicine by itself today is not strong enough. It didn't take in consideration radiation, unless you have some radium or something like that to deal with in your home, which most people can't access. When Louis Pasteur, several years ago, discovered bacteria, gram-positive, gram-negative bacteria, he came out with allopathic medicine, and the two went to war. Allopathic medicine allows you to eat pasteurized foods, sterilize your brain, sterilize your immune system, and walk around like zombies. And that's exactly what happened with most people, because that's what these antibiotics do. Even the atmosphere reacted to that, and the global environment reacted to it. And for a while, even now, there's about 6 antibiotics to every disease that's designed to cure. And these antibiotics don't work. Tetracycline is an antibiotic that used to work great on syphilis and CLAP, venereal diseases. Today, tetracycline won't work on the human body in those kinds of situations. These diseases are becoming terminal again because there's so damn many antibiotics running around this planet, let alone the viruses that are released. The viruses are most dangerous now. When Ebola was introduced by the CIA in 1976 in Zaire, South Africa, it killed 1,000 people from its annunciation on July 16th to its disappearance mid-October. 1,000 people died, and only a few of them were producing serums. And basically what happens with Ebola is that you just bleed to death. The blood in your body falls through the cells and kills you. We have newer, more subtle diseases on the platform at Langley. I've been to Langley. I've been to Quantico. Quantico is the home of the FBI. Langley is home of the CIA. The AIDS virus was introduced. It was actually put on the drawing board in 1975. In America, the way we introduce things into society, and this is all called part of what's called the Haig-Kissinger Depopulation Society. We deliberately try to kill people in our government. It's part of our secret operations to get rid of over 1 billion people in the next few months now, reaching the year 2000. We're pretty much on target. Go down to Thailand, depopulation. There's so much evidence. There's so much evidence. There's so many books. The evidence is in the cow, and the cow bovine and the sheep Vishnu virus.
The CIA introduced it.
Well, the CIA laboratories did. They sure did. Where have you been? You haven't been. You haven't been on top of it. We actually injected it into the homosexual. The first strain was injected into the San Francisco homosexual policy under a hepatitis B vaccine, was, if you excuse vernacular, in the homosexual community of butt-fucking, all right? And it killed 2,000 people that it was injected into. Where did we learn to do that? We started injecting people. Our first time we ever got caught, which President Clinton had to apologize for, was in 1960 in Mobile, Alabama, under a polio virus. We introduced 1 million people to cancer viruses, okay? Clinton had to apologize for that in this current, our current president. Okay, hepatitis B was a perfect way to introduce the AIDS, and the AIDS was cultivated from the herpes 1, 2, and 3, which was introduced in colleges around America back in the 60s because of, you know, extramarital sex. There are scores of books written today by Harvard and MIT graduates on these subjects. Check the internet and you'll find them if you don't believe it. Just so you begin to understand the seriousness of the Haig-Kissinger depopulation policy. It was brought out and enunciated by the federal government in 1981 in March issue of Executive Intelligence Review, a Lyndon LaRoche publication in Washington, D.C. So you can look up Executive Intelligence Review, EIR. I don't know, the area code for Washington is what, 201? You can look it up, call them, ask for that issue. It's probably even on the internet, okay? Where Haig, Alexander Haig, and Henry Kissinger were named as being proponents behind this depopulation because of what was known as the outcome of the Global 2000 report. The Global 2000 report came out during the Carter administration, put together during, or the Reagan administration, put together during the Carter administration, by 19 different federal agencies, that's every one we have, Department of Defense, DOD as we call them, the CIA, the Department of Interior, Conservation, and 44 different countries around the world, including England, which is a major contributor to this report. It was the results of that report that caused the Haig-Kissinger depopulation to come into existence, and it was admitted. Vietnam, for example, was a very good example of what we were trying to introduce over there, in the form of malathion, which was a discovery in the late 50s in Japan that caused sterility in males. And so Agent Orange was sprayed. Later on, they tried to keep on spraying malathion in America under the auspices of MedFlies. So you begin to understand, you know, just some of the things that go on. I've documented all this. If you want, there's a documentation of everything that I'm saying in this book. It'll take you a long time to, I mean, you'll have plenty to do the rest of this lifetime if you want. I do my homework. It's my borrowed slide. When I got over to NASA, I worked with, you know, Wernher von Braun, and I got into the space program. Then I got up to Area 51, and up Area 51 is where we did reverse technology engineering. This is one of our spacecraft. One of my associates flew this thing. I wouldn't call him a friend because of what he did for a living, but... And it's not something that you'd want to know about, but he did fly one of these things in what's called a zero-G suit. This particular vehicle is capable of 33 Gs, 33 times your own you know, acceleration. How many of you know what zero-G suits are? Nobody knows? How many of you heard of the Navy SEALs? Okay, our Navy SEALs can scuba dive now down to 1,000 feet, which would be impossible for the normal person. How do? They wear a special system that puts liquid into their lungs, because what's dangerous about diving to those depths, and I've dove to 200 feet as a scuba diver myself, but down to 1,000 feet, your lungs would collapse. So you literally drown in a solution that carries oxygen. It's a fluorocarbon solution. You drown in it. Well, and when you, and then you start breathing this liquid, and they, you know, these seals.
We're going to have to stop here because they ran out of time, but my promise is that we'll continue this fascinating topic next week. Dr. Fred Bell's Health, Science, and Energy Show, and that particular lecture was being delivered in England, right next door to the, not the Windsor Castle, but Buckingham Palace. Anyhow, that's it for today.